The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Today FM.
Now, our next guest writes serial killer thrillers, epic love stories, and missing persons mysteries all in one. His new novel is All the Colours of the Dark. Chris Whittaker, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's lovely to be here.
How'd you manage to meld all of those into the one book?
With great difficulty. It took 4 years from start to finish and didn't really set out to do all of those things. I just set out to tell quite a simple missing person story, and then it evolved into this big sweeping like search for this girl that spans 26 years in American history.
Okay, so tell us a little bit more about the story and what gave you the idea for it.
So the story begins with a boy called Patch, who is a 13-year-old teenager in Missouri in 1975, and he's walking to school and hears a scream, and he sees a girl about to be abducted. So without thinking, he steps in, she escapes, and he gets taken. And then he is held in a basement, like in the pitch black basement, with another girl named Grace, who he talks to. And he kind of falls in love with her, having never seen her. And then he escapes and can't find his way back to her because he doesn't know where they were held. So he begins this epic search for her, and the police don't really believe that she's real. They think that he conjured her out of his mind because he was because of the trauma. But he feels in his heart that she's real, and so devotes the next 2 decades to finding her.
Trauma's a big thing in your life, isn't it? You've drawn on your own wells of personal experience.
Yes. Yeah.
From what I've been reading about you, Chris, there's sort of been 3 major traumatic incidents in your life. Just go back to the first, because I wonder how difficult is it to ever escape a childhood trauma like you had when, what were you, just past the age of 10?
I was 10 years old, yeah. My parents divorced when I was quite young, and my mum was dating someone that was quite violent. When he used to drink, used to get angry, and he came into my bedroom when I was sleeping one night and pulled me out of bed, and we both heard my arm break. And then he was worried again to trouble and was very angry still. And so made me stay in my room for the night until the morning. I couldn't get any help. And then the next day I told my parents that I had done it playing football. So it was kind of, looking back at it now, it was kind of a pivotal moment in my life. And it felt a bit like I went into the dark one person and came out of the dark another person. I felt completely different afterwards. And it was the inspiration for this book, for writing What Happens to Patch, because he does something similar. Like beforehand, I was felt like a kind of normal schoolboy. And then afterwards, couldn't sleep, was a lot quieter, a lot more polite, because I was worried about getting into trouble. And just everything felt slightly different.
How was your relationship with your mother after that, given that she was involved with this man who had brutalised you?
Yeah, I felt that she was kind of as much a victim as I was, and she struggled after the divorce and went through a really difficult time, and I kept it all really quiet. I was really good at it, you know, not making a scene, and I was good at convincing them that it had happened playing football. So it was difficult, but I didn't at no point did I ask for help.
Did you at any stage get help, even as an adult?
Psychologically.
Yeah.
I have had trouble sleeping since then. I think subconsciously I kind of associate sleep with not being safe. And I've tried some therapy and tried sleeping pills and things like that. The sleep is the biggest problem for me. And I've just kind of made peace with the fact that I'm not a good sleeper and probably won't ever be.
But you've never actually gone for any sort of counselling in relation to that?
Not really. I did my own kind of self-help writing therapy, which I still do now, which seems to work for me, and exercise and, you know, just really simple things I do for mental health.
Because the second major trauma came, what is it, about the age of 19?
19.
When you were stabbed.
Yeah.
When you resisted somebody trying to steal from you.
Still a mobile phone. Yeah, I was out dropping leaflets for my job in North London, and someone approached, tried to mug me for my phone. And I think that because I felt like a victim when I was a kid, I really didn't want to give him my phone.
Didn't want to be a victim again?
Yeah, I felt like that. It didn't feel like a choice. Like, I remember my friends slapping me on the back in the same way that in the book people tell Patch that he did a brave thing, but he just says, how can it be brave if you didn't consider it? You know, and that's a bit how I felt. It just felt like that, you know, it was just, impulsive. You know, I didn't give it a second thought, really. I was just, there's no way you're taking my phone. And
how much damage was done by the stabbing, both physically and psychologically?
Physically, not that bad. I was stabbed 3 times in the side, had loads of stitches, and lost some blood, but it was okay. It could have been worse. He tried to stab me in the chest. And that, you know, I managed to get the knife off of him, but that could have been like fatal easily. This is over a phone. And psychologically difficult. That was what first turned me to writing and PTSD. I went to the, really struggled afterwards, went to the library and borrowed a self-help book. And it talked about trauma technique, which was basically writing. So it was the first time I'd written anything creatively since school.
If somebody tried to steal a mobile phone off you now, at knife point or gun point, what would you do?
I think I'd do the same.
Really?
I know. And that's what I mean about it not being a choice. I think that it would be an innate reaction that, and I've given this thought as well, because I have 3 kids and I tell my 2 boys, you know, if anyone ever asks you for anything, you give it straight away, because like, I'm living proof that it's not worth it. But I still think there would be a part of me probably that would win, that I just don't think I could do it.
Okay, and then tell us a little bit more about how you used it productively for your writing career.
Yeah, so I hadn't really given any thought to being a writer. It wasn't, I went to quite a rough school in London, and no one became a writer from my school. But it was the writing as therapy that made me feel better when anything was going wrong in my life. And so when I was nearing 30 and working in the city and miserable, and I thought, you know, what's the only constant in my life, the thing that I turn to when I'm struggling, and it was writing. And I read a book called The Last Child by John Hart, and he did the same. He was a successful lawyer, quit because he hated it, and wrote a book. So I thought I would follow his lead, and without really considering it, just impulsively quit my job.
But there was a third trauma, I think it would be fair to say, in the job, and you weren't quite a Nick Leeson, but you did manage to lose an enormous amount of money and tried to hide it. Tell us about that.
I did. I wanted to work on a trading desk. I was a broker for a while, which was very like client entertaining, drinking, drugs, things like that, things that wasn't great for me. And I really wanted to work on the trading desk. And my boss said, if you lose £10,000, stop trading. And we'll talk about what went wrong. That's your limit. And I lost £1 million on my first day, and kept it quiet.
How did you lose £1 million, and how did you keep it quiet?
It was a combination of very bad trades and putting in the wrong amount, and it was futures, and it happened very quickly, like in the blink of an eye. And I kept it quiet because I had a friend that worked in the back office who kind of did me a favour, because I stupidly said, I'll make it back. I thought I could make it back before it got discovered, which I clearly couldn't. So I got found out, and they offered me a deal where I could pay back half of it, or they would go to the police. So I just signed the contract at 24 and was in. It was $1 million, so £500,000 back then of debt.
How long did it take you to clear it, or did you?
Yeah, I did clear it. I still got the piece of paper that tells me I'm debt-free, and I look at it sometimes when I'm feeling stressed and remember a more stressful time. It took years, maybe 4 years, something like that, to pay it off. And then I'd kind of had enough of the city. But even though I was starting to make money, you know, I got good at the job. But writing, it felt like it was meant to be.
And how do you feel now? I mean, with all the various issues, do you feel you've worked through them by your writing?
I think so, yeah. I think things like this are cathartic, you know, just talking. Because I used to be quite ashamed of my childhood and the things that had happened. And I hate being pitied or the thought of being a victim. And I'm getting better with that. Like, I've just done a US tour for the book. We found out last night that it's the number 2 on the New York Times bestseller list. So it's gone really, really well. And I think that's because I can connect with the characters, you know, and trauma on a level that maybe I wouldn't be able to had these things not happened to me.
Everyone listening to you can tell you're a London boy. Why is it that you sat all of your work in the United States? I mean, I know a good friend of the show, John Connolly, who lives in Dublin, sets nearly all his work in the United States as well. Why have you chosen that route?
So when I did my therapy after being stabbed, it talked about a technique where you write about the trauma, but you change the location to the last place you were happy. And you change the characters to fictional characters. You change the outcome to something you can control. The last place I was happy, I looked back to my childhood, and my dad took me and my brother to Disney World. So that was in America. So America became my safe place. And I would kind of had all these problems in London, but I would sit down and mentally travel 4,000 miles to the US. And I found that like my creativity. I could leave my problems behind and just focus on the story I wanted to tell. And it stuck with me now. So whenever I sit down to write, I still shut out the world around me and travel all the way to the US mentally.
And I asked you earlier about how your relationship with your mother was, given that her new partner was the person who inflicted the first major trauma. What was your relationship with your father after that, given that he was absent at the time that that happened to you?
Amazingly, he only found out about it recently, not that long ago.
He only found out?
I only told him about it not that long ago.
But had you continued to have a good relationship with him over the years?
I did, yeah.
You didn't sort of blame him for not being there to protect you or anything?
I didn't blame anyone and didn't really have any anger towards the man, strangely. I just, for a long time, blamed myself. And he used to tell me I was a brat, so I'd become like ridiculously polite. And it's something I try and shake now. Like I will ask if I can have a glass of water in my own house.
What age are you?
I'm 42. Yeah, so.
You ask your wife, do you?
Occasionally, yeah. And I really battle with it. And I tell myself not to do it. And like same with opening a window, things like that. Yeah.
But are you in a happy place?
I think so. Happier than I've ever been. I think I still live in fear of the trauma. But, you know, writing has saved me, I think, and makes me happy in a way that not much else does. And being a dad.
And are there many more things that you want to write about?
I don't know. I thought with this book, it's taken 4 years to write and it covers, it answers a lot of the questions, you know, that I used to ask of myself. You know, if you have a difficult childhood, is it possible to write your own ending or is it all predetermined? And this is the only time I've been nervous about a book coming out because I know it's the absolute best that I can do at the moment, you know, and if people didn't like it, I've got nothing else for now. It made me feel quite vulnerable.
New York Times bestseller, as you said, number 2 on the bestseller list. So yeah. Lots of people are liking it. All the Colors of the Dark. Chris Whittaker, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Weekdays from 4:30. Today.